to hear a SNAP representative saying that, you know, she didn't believe them. Well, in that case, it shows that the Vatican still has a way to go on proving that it really is going to put its money where its mouth is. Bishop Scicluna has done an awful lot of good, I think, in trying to get bishops to deal more effectively with abuse in their diocese. But it is clear that this is another step in a very long journey. And unfortunately, you know, here we are with, instead of the Vatican taking the initiative, saying, right, we're going to put all these things into place, it looks as though, you know, this is the UN kind of calling it to account. And so, again, you get the impression, probably, possibly wrongly, that, you know, the Vatican's kind of dragging its feet and only kind of getting something together coherent to say because it's being, because it's having to.
I think you're right on that, Mary. And hello to you. I haven't said that earlier.
Hello, Chris.
And if I could pick a phrase, Mary and Chloe, from the clip you played, there's new language in one of the presenters today when he used the language, the Vatican gets it. Mm. That's not language that's normally associated with the Curia in Rome. But there's far more. My current life is around change management, and there's far more to bringing about change than getting it.
It's Abigail here from the tablet. I would question, you know, whether when Scicluna's saying the Vatican gets it, is he actually being quite polite? I mean, clearly he gets it, but I'm not sure really whether that can be said for everybody in the Curia and everybody high up, because otherwise surely there would be more visible progress. I mean, Pope Francis announced the commission last month to deal with abuse and so on, but we still don't know who's going to be on it. Is it going to be a selection of senior bishops? Is it actually going to include maybe an abuse survivor, for example? You know, we just don't know.
And that's another example of the church moving so slowly. But when you mention Francis, and even a month is a long time to make up your mind on who's going to be on that examination. But I have to say, I think he has been refreshing. I think he's brought around about a significant amount of newer thinking and hope among Catholics, even one slightly disaffected like me, to believe that maybe there is going to be some change, which may take longer than we wanted to take. But he certainly gives me that hope, and his past life bears that out.
I think, I mean, yes, he's been brilliant on poverty and highlighting global inequality. And, you know, he's been wonderful about talking about mercy. And he's been such a good news for Catholics and non-Catholic Christians. And, you know, so many people are just fascinated by him and his image and his approach. And it would just seem that this is almost a kind of almost a noticeable silence. Why is he not speaking out more? You know, everyone's attention is so much on him at the moment. He really could wow the world. And when Tomasi said, oh, you know, we want to be a, you know, world leader in child protection, well, that sounds great. But, you know, we don't want that line to just kind of get forgotten tomorrow because the news agenda's moved on. Actually, Francis is the man who could really start talking about that more and getting the men behind him to make it happen. Well, the men and women.
Let's bring in Caroline Farrow. Forgive me for jumping across here, because I know she's listening very patiently, and I'm sure she's got strong views on this. What do you want to say, Caroline?
Hi, Caroline.
Hello. Well, there's lots to pick up on there. First of all, I'd like to refute this idea that the Vatican is in any way dragging its feet, or that the UN hearing today demonstrated that. I mean, basically, the Vatican has been called before the UN because in 1990 it ratified the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child, and therefore it's reporting because it's a routine thing that it has to do. As was mentioned in your initial report, Germany, Congo and the Yemen previously reported before the Vatican. And secondly, the UN hearing today, it isn't an international court of law. All the UN can do is make a series of recommendations that the Vatican should follow. And we also should remember that SNAP in 2011 tried to bring the Vatican before the International Criminal Court at The Hague, but it got thrown out because, quite rightly, the ICC said that international law, you know, does not apply to the Vatican here, because the Vatican itself does not take responsibility, it shouldn't have to be held account for the crimes of individual priests.
The case was not thrown out of the ICC. They did review the case and ask for more submissions, so they are continuing to look at that. And while it's true that the UN is not a court of law, they certainly can make recommendations, and since the Holy See is part of the Treaty of to Rights of the Children, they are responsible for reporting, just like all the other states are, and for past 9 years they have not done that. They were asked to have submission in writing by November 1st, and they finally submitted it on the 30th. And what they said today was, for example, they're not asking the Holy See anything they don't ask other states for. And one of the things they said is there's never a question one of the members brought up of having people, when they bring a suit against the institution of the church for sexual abuse, to sign confidentiality things, that they won't speak about it, so they can get compensation for reparation for what was done to them.
But the Catholic Church globally has paid out, quite rightly, hundreds of millions of dollars to abuse victims. There is no suggestion that the Church is trying to shirk its responsibility in any way. Just off the top of my head, in Ireland, for example, the Sisters of Mercy, they paid out £116 million to victims. The Diocese of Los Angeles has paid out over $375 million. What the Vatican is saying, and quite rightly, is that of course victims should be entitled to criminal redress, to compensation, but it's not the Vatican themselves per se in Rome that should be held responsible. It is the perpetrators of those crimes, and where it was shown that there was cover-up, regrettably, then it should be those individual dioceses that should be held responsible. Today, speaking at his general audience, Pope Francis explicitly said, "Scandal costs the church dear, and it costs us, the church, a lot of money, and that is good, because we should be ashamed. We should be ashamed of what's happened." But this whole idea of trying to hold the Holy See responsible for the actions of decentralized priests throughout the world is just a spurious one. We know that what happened is that individual dioceses covered this up, and we know that individual priests abused. And also we have to remember that a lot of these cases are really very old. You know, they're from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. That doesn't make the offences any the less terrible, but certainly in the UK and in the US, since 2001, there has been the gold standard implemented. It's said that today the Catholic Church is the safest place for any child to be in.
Well, Caroline, so many issues you've brought up there, and we will address them after the news. Frank, I know you're keen to get in. Father Hyacinth Ennis, who is a Catholic priest in Pretoria in South Africa, is also on the line, itching to get involved in our conversation. Wherever you're listening around the world, you can tweet us using the hashtag WHYS or head to facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. We'll carry on talking in the next few minutes.
The BBC World Service.
We have the headlines.
A wave of attacks across Iraq has killed more than 70 people.
But we go further.
I'm told that in this very market, three young men have lost their lives in different bombings. And I'm here to speak to their father to know more about their story and what happens to the families who have to deal with the grief of losing loved ones.
Telling it how it is.
We're in the Mshatet family house because we want to know what life is really like beyond all these headlines.
Giving people a voice.
Give me an idea about what your life is like.
In Iraq, that there is no freedom for me as a girl, as a woman.
Looking to the future.
The political parties that are ruling the country are unable to see the potential that this country has.
We don't just report the story.
When I say, this is extremely worrying, this is so violent.
We live the story.
People say, well, it's normal. It's our life.
The BBC World Service.
I'm Shaima Feli, live in Baghdad.
The world's radio station.
This is World Have Your Say, and we're discussing the first public questioning of Vatican officials over child abuse within the Catholic Church. The questions at the UN hearing ranged from why the Church wouldn't release its own data on the extent of child abuse to allegations it concealed that abuse. We're getting reaction from victims, Catholic journalists and priests, and we'll discuss whether this is a step forward for the Catholic Church.
BBC News with Cathy Clugston. The Taliban in Afghanistan say they're confident they will soon take power in the country and will not moderate their rigid methods of government and punishment when they do so. A Taliban spokesman told the BBC that the Taliban already controlled large swathes of Afghanistan. The Vatican has come under strong attack over child sex abuse by Roman Catholic clergymen in the first ever public hearing on the issue. A UN panel has been questioning a senior Vatican envoy, with one member of the panel asking why there had been efforts by the Church to cover up and obscure cases of abuse. The Formula One boss Bernie Ecclestone is to go on trial in April in a German court on charges of bribery. The trial relates to a payment of $44 million to a German banker. Mr. Ecclestone denies any wrongdoing. Syrian activists say more than 1,000 people have been killed in the past 2 weeks as rival rebel forces battle one another in the north and east of the country. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said 130 civilians were among the dead. The public prosecutor in Egypt says that three journalists from Al Jazeera English face charges of possessing broadcast equipment without a valid licence with the aim of undermining national security. The prosecutor's statement says that new evidence shows they aim to broadcast false rumours to damage Egypt's reputation and financial standing. A death row inmate in the United States has been executed using a new combination of drugs never used before. Dennis McGuire, a convicted murderer, took more than 15 minutes to die with the new injection. His lawyers had argued the new combination of drugs would cause him terror as he struggled to catch his breath. The con man comedy film American Hustle and the space adventure Gravity are leading the contest for this year's Oscars, with 10 nominations each. The historical epic 12 Years a Slave is close behind with 9 nominations. All three films have been nominated for Best Picture. BBC News.
Hi, this is Zhuang Chen from BBC Chinese. Welcome to World Have Your Say, live from the world's newsroom at the BBC.
Welcome back. We're discussing the Vatican's appearance before a UN hearing when, for the first time publicly, it was forced to answer questions about child abuse in the Catholic Church. It proved an uncomfortable afternoon for the officials, who were asked why did the Vatican continue to describe the abuse as an offence against morals rather than a crime against children, and why wouldn't it hand over its own data on child abuse? Well, one archbishop said such crimes could never be justified, while another official said things need to be done differently. But will this change anything, and is it a step forward for Catholics? I'm Chloe Tilley, and we're here live for another 30 minutes. Well, wherever you're listening around the world, whether you're a Catholic or whether indeed you have been affected by this story, whether you're a victim or survivor of child abuse, then pick up the phone. You can give us a call, country code 44 20 31 62 42 42. We're on Twitter. You can use the hashtag WHYS or head to facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. Just before the news, we heard from Caroline Farrow, who's a member of Catholic Voices and columnist for Catholic Universe, raising a number of points. I know Frank Scott Lennon, who studied to be a priest but then left just before ordination, was itching to get in. We'll come to you in a moment, Frank. Abigail Fryman is still with us, the online editor for the Catholic Tablet, and Mary Kaplan is a representative of SNAP, the Survivors of Abuse in the Catholic Church. She's also a representative to the UN. And Father Hyacinth Ennis is a Catholic parish priest in Pretoria in South Africa. Frank, first of all, do you want to respond to some of the points that Caroline made before the news? She was basically saying that the Vatican should not be held responsible. For those people who weren't listening, the Vatican shouldn't be held responsible for the actions of individuals.
Yes, I do, and thank you for the opportunity. Caroline, I just want to give a diverse view to yours on one essential issue, and that is that, yes, individual responsibility of bishops and priests was the key part in this. But the Holy See is by no means exonerated. And when you say that it's not up to the Holy See, or the Holy See doesn't interfere in the way bishops run their diocese, yes, it does. It does explicitly. For example, I could name, I won't name them, but I could easily name four or five priests who are silenced by direct intervention in various dioceses in Ireland, by direct intervention from the Holy See. So they can intervene in what they want to intervene, particularly on doctrinal matters.
Yeah, this is the thing that...
Sorry, can I just clarify that for a moment? So, Frank, you're saying that there are five priests that you're not going to name on air, obviously, in Ireland, who are suspected of abusing children. They're still in their position, and the Holy See has told them to stay there? Frank, I just want to be clear on that allegation.
I'm saying that those priests, for nothing to do with clerical abuse, but are silenced on doctrinal issues, where they wished to talk about things like women priests, things like homosexuality, that was not acceptable to the Vatican. So the Vatican intervenes very deeply and interferes and has them suspended from duty. So my point is, if the Holy See could do that, contrary to what Caroline is saying, then they could also do it, could have done it, on the abuse issue as well, of which they were aware.
Can I come back to that briefly? The reason I know the priests to whom Frank is referring, and the reason that they have been asked not to speak on various doctrinal matters is because what they are saying is against doctrine, and it could really confuse the faithful. It could really confuse Catholics in the pews.
But the fact is that
although the CDF, the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, does have the power to say to individual priests, you mustn't speak out on this issue or that particular issue, when it comes to the problem of child abuse, which was horrible, nobody is disputing this in any way. Actually, the evidence that we have is that the Vatican was not aware that it was going on, because it was left to individual bishops and dioceses to deal with, and a lot of the time they weren't even following the Vatican's own directives, which were to pass the cases of abuse directly to the Vatican. So the Vatican could not be expected to act upon things which it didn't know about. And in 2001, when Pope Benedict took over, he was then Cardinal Ratzinger, and he took over the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, he said, right, okay, I'm going to fast track all these cases. He was so disturbed by what he was hearing that he said, right, there is no room for this sort of behaviour in the church. And he tried to fast, well, in fact, he did. He put in measures to fast track so that the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith could instantly deal with these priests, not cover them up. And therefore, what we know is that what the Vatican actually has is second-hand copies, what has been passed to them by individual dioceses. So it's not that the Vatican per se, it is the individual diocese who did not follow the procedure.
OK, Caroline, let's have a conversation. Yeah. Frank, do come back. And then Abigail, I know you want to make a point.
That's reactive. That's a reactive situation that you're describing. Why didn't Benedict go out looking for those situations when he knew that the number of complaints that were coming in that he wanted to, in your terms, fast track a reaction to? Why wasn't there a proactive rather than reactive approach that would go out looking, if there is this evidence of abuse, then it must be somewhere else? Why can't we knock our bishops into shape? If we can knock them in on doctrinal issues, why can't we on moral issues? And it's the moral issues that affect the general people, who are the church, not the magisterium.
Abigail?
I think one of the things I want to comment on.
Yes, I mean, the seeming kind of discord between the fact that the Holy See sees fit to intervene if a priest or a bishop even mentions the possibility of ordaining women, but says it's not its place to, or shouldn't be held accountable for doing so on abuse, just sends out totally the wrong message. It sends out the message that says, thinking about women's ordination is more dangerous to you than child abuse.
And absolutely,
it's one of those things that just unfortunately makes the Vatican appear so hideously out of touch with, you know, the opinions of people outside its walls, unfortunately. I mean, Caroline talked about the Holy See, you know, being blameless on this, as far as I recall, I think the Vatican's guidelines on how to sort of handle allegations, obviously, you know, it's been a learning curve for the Western culture generally over the last few decades, but I do think that the Vatican's were in Latin for until, I don't know, relatively recently. But yes. I think I remember in Ireland when their big abuse report came out a couple of years ago, there was one tragic story of abuse of a bishop who had written to the Vatican asking for help and guidance, saying, look, you know, how do I handle all this? What do I do? And he hadn't addressed it to the correct department. So it just didn't get a response.
And that is clearly unacceptable. But at the same time, you know, how can you're saying that the Vatican needs to be proactive, and it's a bit like saying to someone, you've got to go out and discover these crimes that must be happening. We know they must be happening. Ultimately, we can only deal with these crimes when they are reported, and they must be reported to the relevant civil authorities. They must be brought to light. But a lot of the times,
Caroline,
these weren't being reported.
Caroline, you're still in reactive mode. An organisation, if I'm in a manufacturing organisation and I get 3 reports about poor quality of a product, do I go out to my managers, be it the manufacturing manager, the marketing manager, whatever, and say, God, lads, we really better look at our systems to make sure we stymie those complaints, we meet the customers, we talk to them. Now, that's what I'm saying is a proactive approach. And I give you the situation that the church, I pray for the church by times with a simple prayer, which says, move our church to where it should be.
But can I say one thing to you, Frank? And this is to reassure you. I know earlier you talked about what happened to you at seminary. Well, for example, my husband was a former Church of England vicar, and he's just been through the process to become a Catholic priest, and he's been through seminary. Now, what he tells me about what is going on in seminary in terms of child protection, in terms of, you know, the rigorous ongoing psychological assessment and development that they have, they really make sure that as much as they can, that nothing slips through the net.
I have to acknowledge you're correct, absolutely correct. The standard of protection now is really great. But the second prayer that I just wanted to elaborate on, move slightly off this subject. I don't know if it'd be possible for Francis, out of whom I have so much hope, to think in terms of having a consistory of cardinals. An election of cardinals, where the rules would change, where every cardinal wouldn't have to be 85 stumbling along trying to govern a church, that the next consistory would elect 100 cardinals or whatever number, and 80% of them would be under 50. There are people of huge talent there. That's how change comes about. I can't look, hopefully, at change even with Francis, when I see that he's surrounded by 70 and 80-year-olds.
But that's slightly off topic, though, isn't it, really? Because you're just talking about general change in the church. To get back to the issue of child abuse, as you've acknowledged yourself, procedures now are absolutely watertight. We are setting the gold standard, and that's what we have to go with and move forward with and say, yes.
Mary, make her point, and then I want to bring in Father Ennis, who's been waiting incredibly patiently. But Mary, do go ahead.
That the church is now the safest place for children, I would disagree with that. Right now, Bishop Finn, who has been convicted of covering up and not presenting evidence right away, has not been removed, he's still in ministry, in service. By the standards now that you're talking about, if Bishop Finn came with a conviction, he would not be able to teach a Sunday school class, to do anything.
But did Bishop Finn abuse children? Did Bishop Finn abuse children?
He covered up. Things that happens is that
he covered up incorrectly. He should not have covered up. He has been convicted for covering up. He has not been convicted for abusing children. Therefore, one could argue that having been prosecuted and you know, dealt a civil penalty or criminal penalty for what he did that was wrong. Although, from my understanding, is the American courts have now thrown that out because although what he did was wrong, it wasn't against the law at the time. He has not abused children. He has made a mistake. He has covered up where he shouldn't have covered up. However, that does not mean that he poses a threat to children. And presumably now, having made that dreadful mistake, he would not do it again.
Anyone who covers up crimes against children, according to the church's own standards, cannot be allowed to have contact with teaching Sunday school with children. So this is the church's own standards. It's not something that...
So do you know he has contact with Sunday school children? You know, where is your evidence for this? My understanding is simply that he has been released from prison, but he's not actually in active ministry.
Okay, let's have a conversation. Caroline, I want to give Mary the opportunity to make the point she wants to make, and then I'll bring in Father Ennis. Go ahead, Mary.
I think you're thinking of someone else. He was never in prison. He was not sentenced to prison. And I'm not saying he teaches Sunday school. I'm saying the church says that anyone who's convicted of protecting the church over children cannot be allowed in ministry with young people and children. What I feel the church does, and so many of the bishops, is that they delay, they deny, and they cover up. So by the time that people try to bring the information to the civil authorities to be investigated, the statute of limitation has run. And this was...
I don't think that there's the evidence for that, to be fair. With respect, I think that's just your opinion. And the evidence is showing absolutely otherwise. You know, we've just seen a papal ambassador to Poland who is facing a Vatican criminal trial. So
Sorry, Caroline, because he's, you know, the Vatican's just refused to extradite him to the Dominican Republic. You know, there's a secular authority that wants to hold him to account because he's had all these allegations of abusing young boys. And the Vatican are saying, no, we'll deal with him on our territory. It just sends out the wrong message totally.
It's still,
you know, as if the message is still, we are here to protect our own, you know, we've got to protect the institution and its image, rather than, actually, what happened? What went wrong? What about protecting children?
Let's cross to Pretoria. Let's bring in Father Hyacinth Ennis, who's a Catholic parish priest in Waterkloof in Pretoria in South Africa. Father Ennis, you win the award for being the most patient guest today, so thank you so much for listening on the line. You've listened to the conversation. What would you like to add?
I would like to just make the point that certainly, I was aware, and I'm a Vatican II product, you could say. I did my theology and philosophy in the 50s and theology in the 60s. And certainly in the seminary training now, things are much more exacting than they were, say, perhaps in the past. But I was lucky because I had teachers who not only were theologically properly trained, but who had pastoral experience. So some of the things that were mentioned by some people here, I knew all about that, even as a young student in theology. And we knew, therefore, what we were heading for with ordination. So we had to be responsible about our task as ministers in the church. And I can say this, that also we have to be responsible to the civil authorities. For example, here in Pretoria, we have a teaching catechism, whether we're lay or clerical, it doesn't matter. We have to abide by the law of the land, and there's an examination of us before we begin the particular school year, you know what I mean? So the rights of the child are certainly protected there, but then from the point of view of the church, we have to be sure that we give the future priests a proper training.
Do you feel there has been a culture change within your church?
I would say so, especially the movement away from the conspiracy of silence, as they speak about it. And certainly with Pope Francis, there's a much more openness visible and visibility, accountability, whatever you want to call it. But I wouldn't like to blame the Vatican for everything, because obviously this whole business about bishops being responsible for their own diocese, and they have to be responsible for the people of God in the diocese, and the majority of the people of God are the laity, and we all begin as children. So I'm just trying to reflect on a much wider way of looking at the issue as such.
So if you felt that you had concerns that maybe someone was abusing children, whether it be in the area in which you work or whether it be further afield, do you now feel confident that you could go and speak to someone within the church to raise those concerns? And was that always the case in times gone by?
Yeah, well, it was, I'd say, in my own case, because I was teaching moral theology in the seminary for so many years, 34 years. But therefore, I was open to any sort of questioning of my own teaching, but also picking up from, because I had lots of pastoral experience helping out in parishes. And so I was very much aware of what was going on. And the abuse of children is a huge issue, especially here now in South Africa. I suppose since President Mandela emphasized so much about children too, that it's out in the open now, and therefore we there's no longer that conspiracy of silence or trying to cover it up, either within the family or within the parish, whatever way you want to look at it, or within the church.
And that's one of the things Father has said about Pretoria that I'd like to reflect. I know we're talking about just the church, but I wouldn't like to end this debate by saying that there was considerable abuse in other institutions outside the church. And I'd like to reflect that in the past, we did not understand or have in place the right mechanisms for hearing from people who were being abused or knew of people who were being abused. I think those structures are present now, but we still don't have all of the responses at the senior levels in the church that we should.
Absolutely. I mean, thank you, Frank. I was thinking, you know, in this discussion, where is the bishop? You know, where was the Catholic office in London today saying Bishop so-and-so is available for interview? Here are the numbers. I mean, I've seen a lot of interviews covering this today, and all sorts of voices are taking part. And Caroline, with all due respect, you know, in a sense, you shouldn't have to take part. Where is the church here, you know, to defend itself?
Well, it's quite interesting you mentioned that, Abigail, because I tweeted this just before we came on air, but we were hoping today's programme we'd be able to do an outside broadcast from somewhere in the London area, because that's obviously where we're based, a Catholic institution where we could go in and meet people from the church, talk to people, and we approached more than 10, and every occasion we were told, no, we can't do it. Now, in some occasions, it was simply, it's too late notice. Other people, it's not a talking point. And it very much felt that parts of the Catholic Church were just not willing to have this conversation today.
But I think there's a distinction between
laity,
but bishops specifically, because this is a question about how bishops managed the allegations that were put to them.
But I think part of this in the UK is because we know, particularly since 2001 and the publication of the Nolan Report, we know that the Catholic Church in the UK has got its house in order. And if one thing can come out of the UK...
Say so then. I mean, they've actually got a lot to be proud of, as you say, you know, had the Nolan Report, Cumberland Report. In fact, Britain is ahead of many other countries, or England and Wales, ahead of many other countries. And, you know, it could be held up as a model of best practice. Well, there's an awful lot they could be saying.
Well, I don't have access to the bishop's diaries, clearly. So, you know, I think it's fair that perhaps some of them just were engaged in other things, because this has sort of suddenly come up as in the last couple of weeks. I also think that it isn't, as far as the UK is concerned, and also America too, we've got our house in order. And in fact, this process is good because it is transparent, and the Vatican is trying to display that there is nothing they are fearful of. We've got our house in order. We've got procedures in place. But I think there are people with respect that will always read what they want to read into church politics and church affairs. And I think there are people who will always sort of have a certain bias against the Catholic Church, and so will just take whatever messages they want. But I don't think that the fact that there aren't bishops talking about it, I'm sure if you had approached individual bishops and said, okay, would you like to talk about this? I'm sure many of them would have been happy to do so and would have said, yeah, our safeguarding policies are...
I have to respect Chloe's statement, if it was Chloe who made the statement, that you made 10 efforts and you got
that's
noticed.
Right. Yes, it was the World Health Say team who did it, yeah.
And to me, that is reflective of a non-forthcoming regime of the past. Other people can make time, and if I were, I would like to think that if bishops were asked, they would say, God, that's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to talk about an issue that is very current and live for Catholics.
But my understanding is that the reason that the outside broadcast didn't take place was because they were hoping to host it in a church, and understandably, churches on a Friday night will have...
No, I mean, it wasn't churches. It was, for example, I don't want to name specific places, but it was church halls, it was places attached to churches. It was not anywhere where any kind of service would be taking place.
Sure,
but
they could have had other events, couldn't they?
Of course they could. I'm not suggesting for a moment that more than 10 institutions were saying, no, we don't want to talk about this. I'm just saying it's very interesting that for that number to say absolutely not, it's an interesting thing. And here on World Have You Say, we're always very open about what we do and the processes we go through. And I just wanted to share it with the audience.
And I think, to be fair, it's just logistics, you know, late stage logistics. If you have got a paying group using your church hall or church building to do something.
And of course, we will never know. But equally, when Pope Francis, when the previous Pope decided that he was going to stand down, on the very day we came in, it happened at 11 o'clock in the morning, we phoned a church institution and we were able to do a programme live at 1800 that day, so 7 hours later. So it's not always impossible. And frequently on World Have You Say, every day we decide what we're going to talk about on the day, and we managed to go out to do outside broadcasts. So it's not simply fair to say it's too late notice, because we have done it on previous occasions.
I agree with absolutely.
I'm going to have to cut out in a minute. I just would like to respond to one or two things. As far as the cases being 1950 and 1960s, that's something that I often hear, but that we have many, many current cases, and very sadly, since SNAP is international, we are seeing so many cases coming from Poland, Germany, certainly Australia now, Africa. And it's really very sad, and it's really very disheartening to see this happening. And when we try to work with the civil authorities to investigate this, and the bishops do hold evidence back, and when we try to move the statute of limitations so that if the evidence is not available right away, constantly in the states here, the Catholic League will always send, the Catholic bishops rather, will always send a lobbying group. It's very frequently the most prestigious and expensive lobbying group they have to fight this. Certainly, victims don't have the monies that the church has and can't get the lobbying groups. And if they really want to make it the safest place for children, as you said before, get the evidence out there. Get the ones that are abusing out. Get the bishops that cover up out, and you will have a fresh and open church. But fighting against this and sending lobbying groups and PR firms to just discredit the truth is really disheartening.
Mary, thank you for joining us on World Have You Say. Thank you also to Caroline, Abigail, Frank and Father Ennis. Thank you for listening. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow, and you can also join me at 15 hours GMT on BBC World News for our television edition of World Have You Say.
Weekends on the BBC World Service.
The French economist Daniel Cohen says rich countries don't always breed happy people.
The US, if you look at the number of people who say that they are very happy, you have a third less today than you had.